5:15 on a Tuesday afternoon. Our next guest on the program is a basketball legend, a member of the College Basketball Hall of Fame. He played several seasons in the NBA for the Buffalo Braves, the LA Lakers, and the Boston Celtics. And he's the author of a terrific new memoir entitled Star with a Broken Heart, The Untold Story of Dave Gavitt, Marvin Barnes, and Ernie DiGregorio, their battles on and off the court. We're happy to be joined by Ernie D himself, Ernie DiGregorio. Ernie, it's great to have you with us. Well, I want to tell you, first of all, I didn't know what to expect from this book, but it was an absolutely powerful and captivating read. And, you know, I'm sure you've heard this a million times through the years, but you were such a hero to so many of us vertically challenged basketball players. But it was great to read the story of what was going on behind the scenes and this great friendship between you and Marvin Barnes and Dave Gavitt.
Yeah, thank you. I really appreciate that because it was from my heart, and those guys were really special, as you could tell in the book, to me. And, you know, with them going, it's never going to be the same, but we had some tremendous battles on and off the court. You know what I mean?
Oh, absolutely. Well, I love the stories of your youth and your parents who were such a source of strength for you. But in the early days, you know, your mom wasn't sold on this. What did she say? Forget about that stupid basketball?
Yeah, go to work with your father and make the money. You know. But she loved my brother. She used to tell my brother, let Johnny sleep, take Ernie to work.
But how great that your dad finally, your dad saw your basketball skills and let you get away with working a half day.
Yeah, he used to hear the talk around town, how good his son was, and then he started believing it. When I told him how good I was, he wouldn't believe me. But when the talk got around that this guy's a really great player, you know, he started letting me work only a half day. And then when I got really good, he told me I didn't have to work at all. My brother didn't like that. He's still mad to this day.
But how great that here you are today living in the house that you were able to buy her thanks to basketball.
Yeah, no question. You know, I wish I bought five of them because I bought it right by the beach, and it's, you know, a house that I spent like $24,000. Then, right now, you could get $900,000. Imagine that. It's crazy.
Well, you honed your skills in those early morning practice sessions largely by yourself, and boy, you brought back memories to me when you talked about the sound of those chain nets on the outdoor courts.
Yeah, I love that sound. You know, those were my favorite nets anywhere. Even, you know, playing inside, I loved playing with those chains nets and make a swish and hear that those chains. That was music to my ear. And the other thing I really enjoyed, believe it or not, I used to practice when it rained because I knew no one else would be practicing, and that would be a huge advantage for me. And sometimes the courts would not be, you know, completely flat, and you'd get a little gully. And it'd be raining there, and the ball would hit that water and just, you know, make that splash noise, and it wouldn't even come up. So that was fun, too.
Well, and you took that basketball with you everywhere you went, even if it was running an errand for your mom, the basketball was with you at all times.
Yeah, you know, because it was fun, Rich. I love to have fun, and I told someone the other day, somebody posted online that Ernie D, when he used to go on a date, used to have his basketball, you know, in the middle. And I said, no, when I picked up my girlfriend, I'd throw my basketball in the back seat. And then after the date, when I dropped her off, I would grab it and put it in the front seat and just, you know, have it in my hand, you know, on the seat while I was driving. It just felt comfortable in my hand and, you know, it became an extension of me when I dribbled the ball. That's why I could pass it so well because, you know, I'd never look down at it.
Well, you went to prep school to get yourself ready to go to Providence, but it took some adjustments and a few tweaks of the rules for you to feel comfortable at prep school.
Yeah, first day I was away from home in my life, you know, 19 years old. In fact, one of my teammates at North Providence High, he got a scholarship half in football because he was a quarterback and half for basketball. But when it came time to go, he never even showed up. He he couldn't leave his girlfriend, you know, back home. So I went, and after, after like the first day, you know, I got homesick because that's the first time I've ever been away from home.
Well, so yeah, you were cooking up steaks, taking care of business, and eating right there in your room.
Oh yeah, I had it good. My father used to bring me steaks. In those days, it used to get really cold in the winter, and I would skate across across the pond. It used to freeze right up, so it was really nice.
We're talking with Ernie DeGregorio here on Downtown. His new book is called Star with a Broken Heart. You write so eloquently about your coach, Dave Gavitt, and it sounds like the kind of coach that everybody would love to have. You said that he was always in control. He never lost his cool. And also, you know, you hear people, coaches say, well, you got to treat everybody equally. But what Dave Gavitt seemed to understand was that didn't mean treating everybody the same.
Exactly. He was a master at understanding people's personality and what made them tick. And, you know, I was the kind of guy who was very sensitive if somebody, you know, got on me and I'd go in a shell. And Coach Gavitt knew that, and he wouldn't really get on me. He knew a different way to push my button. And then the other guys, you know, they needed to be pushed, some guys, and he would get on them. But what made him special was, you know, he never yelled. He always talked to us. And he used to tell us from the first day of practice, it didn't matter where we were then, it's where we ended up that counted when it came tournament time.
And I love the story of how you became Ernie D because of the great broadcaster Chris Clark.
Yeah, he had trouble pronouncing DeGregorio like many, many people do. And so finally, he shortened the name and called me Ernie D, and that's how I became Ernie D.
And then that friendship with Marvin Barnes began pretty early when Coach Gavitt sent you into his neighborhood to pick him up, and a bond formed pretty quickly there between the two of you.
Yeah, we both loved basketball, and our goal was the same, which was to play in the NBA and get drafted in the first round. So every day at practice, both of us, you know, really worked hard and knew, because there was no ESPN and games on TV all the time, that you had to win as a team collectively to get on television, national television, and then you could get that exposure, and that would really catapult your opportunities to be a professional. And that's what we did. We lost two games that year, went 24-2, and right to the Final Four. So we won a lot of games.
Yeah, and that senior year was something special. You added Kevin Statham from Holy Cross, and you knew you had something going. What did it make you feel like, and you captured so well in the book, when you guys got that win over Lefty Driesell and the Maryland Terrapins to head to the Final Four?
Yeah, that was the happiest, you know, game in my life, because to get to go to the Final Four was a hell of an accomplishment, and we knew we were good enough to do it, but to actually have done it and to celebrate on almost Maryland's home court was really a special, special event.
I thought it was very interesting, too, not just the relationship you and Marvin had, but you and Coach Gavitt, that he actually wanted your opinion and would sit down and talk to you guys about what was going well and what could be done differently, and the fact that he was open to suggestions from players.
Yeah, that's what made him special. I tell people all the time, he had no ego. He never thought he was bigger than the team. The one thing he did that was brilliant, when he did so many things that were brilliant, but this one thing really stuck out to me, was he knew each player's talents, and he developed the team according to their talents, and he would hide their weaknesses. So he was really a coach, and I say in my book, you know, he always wanted, when he died, to be known as a coach first. And I think a lot of people, you know, would be surprised at that because of the, you know, huge operation he developed in the Big East, but he loved to coach.
People will be surprised to know, young readers, that the NBA draft was not at all what it is today. There was none of the pomp and circumstance, but you had some options, which way to go, the ABA with Kentucky, the NBA with Buffalo, but your dream all along had been not just to play, but to prove to everybody that you were an NBA caliber player.
Yep, that was it. That was my goal. My goal, ever since I started playing basketball from a little town in North Providence, where, you know, they never produced an NBA player in Rhode Island ever. You know, people always questioned and doubted how good I really was. And whether it was prep school or high school or college, you know, to get that opportunity and play in the NBA against guys like Walt Frazier, Earl Monroe, Bill Bradley, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Julius Erving, John Havlicek, Dave Collins, Tiny Archibald. You know, these were great. Jerry West, Oscar Robinson. These were great, great players. And I had a chance to compete against them. And that was, to me, the most satisfying thing I could ever do from all that practice.
Well, you had a great season, a Rookie of the Year in the NBA. The next year, Marvin finished his senior year at Providence, went to St. Louis in the ABA because they offered more money, largely. But you saw some trouble right away when you went out to visit him.
Yeah, you could tell that, you know, it looked like something was fishy because of, you know, all the people coming in the houses. And, you know, I brought it to his attention. But his answer was always, nothing's wrong. But I could tell, you know, when you grow up with people and you know them, you can sense and feel when something wasn't right. And, you know, we battled, Coach Gavin and I, right to the end, trying to help him. I think, you know, one of the nicest things Coach Gavin ever said to me was, my greatest assist was not on the basketball court. It was keeping my brother alive from drugs. And, you know, you can try, but until the person, you know, he did so well for so many years. He went like 12 years once being sober. But then, you know, a couple of bad decisions led to, you know, the fatal death of him at the end. And it was never the same without him.
Absolutely. You suffered that awful knee injury in your second season. You'd never been hurt before that, right?
Right. All I did was, my second year, we started off in Boston, and I had 33, 14 for 18 from the floor in the Garden, so I was feeling my oats. Came back to Buffalo, played against the Bulls, Chicago. I had 25, and I said, boy, I'm going to be an all-star this year. And then the third game, we went out to Golden State, and I just made a simple chest pass, just turned a little bit, and I felt a little pinch in my knee, and it swelled up. And that's when it was a torn cartilage, and, you know, it was a battle ever after that. It was a whole different battle than just playing basketball. It was a battle of playing minutes. It was a battle to rehab, because in those days, they didn't have arthroscopic surgery.
Right.
They didn't go in and just take out the torn cartilage. In those days, they took the whole cartilage out. And that was definitely not a good thing. And it was tough after that. It wasn't never the same. But I can always say, my last year with the Celtics, I threw John Havlicek, my childhood hero, his last assist and his last basket. So, you know, even through the tough times, you know, after I got hurt, I did have some, you know, some good times, good moments.
Oh, absolutely. And you must treasure that autographed picture that you have of John Havlicek.
Oh, yeah. I got an autographed ball with him that he wrote, you know, Ernie D, you're the best. Anything from him was special because he was such a humble, good person. And no one worked harder and played better than he, I thought, in my mind. I loved the way he played.
It's such a powerful and poignant moment in the book when you all gather for your number retirement ceremony. That had to be a special moment to be there with your brother.
Oh, that was special. And, you know, to be have my number retired with Jimmy Walker, Marvin Bonds, I couldn't ask for two, you know, closer friends or greater players. And that was really a special, special moment. You know, I just wish my mother was alive to be there. But, you know, luckily she got to see me play my whole senior year, and I gave her a lot of thrills and my family and friends. But that retirement was really nice.
And then the ultimate reward of being selected and inducted into the College Basketball Hall of Fame.
Yeah, that was amazing when the guy called me up and told me. I didn't even know they had a College Basketball Hall of Fame. And eventually my whole family went down in Kansas City. It was right before COVID, so we lucked out. You know, because if it was COVID, they wouldn't have had anything. And my grandkids, you know, got to interact in the Kansas City Museum over there, where they pretended they were Johnny Most on the microphone, and it was fun. It was really special.
And the through line in this book is the great support you've had along the way, first from your parents, and then your immediate family, and family's been such an important part of your story, and I know instrumental to all the success you've had.
Yeah, they mean everything. You know, that's I used to tell people I played more for my family than I did for me, because I knew I was good. I had no doubt I could do what I could do. But when they got to see me play, and I made them happy, that put a smile on my face, and I was really happy.
Do you still carry Coach Gavin and Marvin Barnes with you?
Oh, yeah, all the time. You know, they got a game tonight, Providence. They're playing Marquette. And when I go in the arena, there'll be 14,000 people. And there won't be a time where someone will come up to me and they'll say they remember that team and when Marvin got hurt, or tell me stories about Coach Gavin. So they'll always be with me, you know, till the day I die. So I was very fortunate to have two beautiful people like that and be part of, you know, my journey. And that's why I wanted to write the book, because, you know, they're no longer here. And I can relive a lot of those great times we had and share them with people.
Well, it's a great tribute to them. It's a book about basketball, but about so much more than that, about brotherhood and friendship. And it's a wonderful read. Star with a Broken Heart, Ernie D. Gregorio. It's been great to talk with you. Thanks so much for being with us. I wish you good luck with the book. Happy holidays to you and your family, and good health in the coming year.
And thank you so much for having me. Merry Christmas, and I really enjoyed the interview, and God bless you too. Thank you.